Welcome to Finding Pelvic Sanity. If you're struggling with pelvic pain, pelvic floor dysfunction, or pregnancy and postpartum issues, you're in the right place. These issues are common, but not something that you have to live with. We've seen the most complex patients from all over the world at Pelvic Sanity in Southern California. You might be feeling frustrated, embarrassed, or dismissed by the medical community, often for years. We know just how tough that can be, and we want to help you find pelvic sanity again.
We're Jesse and Dr. Nicole Cozine. Together we run Pelvic Sanity Physical Therapy, wrote the IC Solution, and Nicole has trained thousands of pelvic PTs to provide better care. We want this podcast to provide hope and get you on the path to healing.
Thousands of people with pelvic health issues find relief and live healthy, happy, and pain-free lives. And so can you. Let's get started.
Hey friends, welcome back to another episode of the Finding Pelvic Sanity podcast with Jesse and Dr. Nicole Cozine. Hey Nicole.
Hello.
Talking today about Elmeron, and is Elmeron the best thing for interstitial cystitis? Nicole, we have a lot to say on this. It's going to be a fun episode.
We do. And you know, I think this is something too where we were stating this in the IC Solution when we wrote it. The IC Solution came out in 2016. We were writing it and going through all of the major research that we did for that book just prior to that. And this is something that we have now come to have a lot more information on. And because we suspected it when we were writing the IC Solution, and now we have definitive answers on this question, is Elmeron the best thing for IC? I think the too long don't read version is absolutely no, but we're going to talk about why, what you should do about it. And as always, we give you the language to talk to your providers about it if this is something that is concerning to you.
Yeah, and this is something, Nicole, everybody knows your qualifications. Some of you guys out there listening may be wondering what the hell I'm doing here. But this is actually in a little bit of my wheelhouse, as I used to, in a previous life, actually design and run studies like the ones that got Elmeron approved by the FDA. So I'm very familiar with the creation of these studies, with how to analyze this data, with what it takes to get through the FDA process. And so one of the reasons that we're talking so much about Elmeron is that it is, and it remains, the only FDA-approved oral medication for interstitial cystitis. And I want to tell you guys why, honestly, that doesn't mean a whole lot. So just with the way that the FDA process works is it is extremely time consuming and extremely expensive to get anything approved through the FDA process. So we're talking tens of millions of dollars, generally multiple years, at least five, more like 10. And what ends up happening is that a lot of drugs that we know are relatively effective for these various pelvic pain conditions get approval for one condition. And then doctors are able to prescribe it for everything, even if it's not technically FDA approved for that. So like amitriptyline, Nicole, is a perfect example. Is that we know it's relatively effective for patients with IC. It's one of the things that's recommended with an evidence grade of C by the American Urological Association. I think it might even be a B for the American Urological Association. But it's never actually been approved for interstitial cystitis because it doesn't make sense for the drug company to take all of that time and all of that money to get it approved when doctors can go ahead and just write a prescription for it, even if it hasn't had a specific FDA claim to be effective against interstitial cystitis. Does that all make sense?
Yeah, I think so. I think that, yeah, Elavil is a really great example of that. So Elavil is the name for amitriptyline as well that you might be heard about. And it is FDA approved for fibromyalgia. And so they did think that it was monetarily advantageous for them to go through that process. But now once it's approved, then like Jesse said, now we can use it in what this is called off-label uses of drugs. And it's very common in the medical community. So it's something wrong with doing it that way. But that's one of the reasons why just because something is FDA approved doesn't mean it's great. It doesn't mean it's not great.
And so I think that's one of the reasons that it is prescribed so much is if you have a urologist, for example, who doesn't really know a ton about the condition, they might just go and do the same thing you're doing basically is Google and say, what is the FDA approved medication for this? Elmeron is the first thing that pops up. And so it's often prescribed, but I don't think a lot of those urologists necessarily have done a deep dive into the research. They're just saying, hey, what is on my list of things that is FDA approved for treating IC? And for a long time, I think it was kind of felt like it was okay because, you know, everyone was like, well, it might help, it might not help. And it doesn't really have that big of side effects, although we're going to talk about that later, because for a lot of you guys who have taken it and dealt with some of those side effects, you might be resenting that characterization that was like so easy to do. But then we started to get reports that Elmoran is substantially linked to retinal damage and that it is dose dependent. So the longer you've been on it or the more you've taken, the more likely it is that you have retinal damage, and that may persist even after stopping taking Elmoran. So this was a real big bombshell, all of this information coming out from a couple of initial patients to a huge retroactive study that was done through all the Kaiser data and combed through that showed that Elmoran is really linked, and that forced the company to put a FDA warning label on it. And there's even language within the AUA guidelines talking about the potential risk of macular damage and vision-related injuries that you have to consider if you're going to be taking Elmoran or starting on Elmoran.
Absolutely. And so this is something that you just need to be aware of. You need to have a good, fruitful conversation with your urologist or the prescribing physician that takes this into consideration. And so for many of you, that is, you guys are like, duh, I knew about all of the side effects. I maybe didn't know about the eye stuff, but it didn't really help my symptoms. And for a small subset of patients that it does help with, you know, you do have to talk to your physician about what are now the cost versus the benefits of being on this medication now that we have this new information.
So let me go back through and walk actually through the efficacy data around this, because I think people are really surprised when they actually hear what the research has said about Elmoran. So there have been five controlled randomized studies of Elmoran. And of those, two showed a small benefit of Elmoran. We'll talk about what that meant. And three showed no benefit at all above a placebo. And if you guys are kind of tuning in now, like the gold standard of research is basically you randomize a group of people, you give one of them the actual study drug, in this case, Elmoran, you give the other ones just a small sugar pill. And so that accounts for the placebo effect, or the fact that when you get medication that you think is going to help you, a lot of times it helps you, even if that's not a real medication. So you can't really tell and just say, oh, this worked for me. You have to compare it to a placebo in order to make sure that was actually a real effect and not just your mind actually getting you better. And sometimes the placebo effect actually really does work. I mean, it's not just, you know, feeling that way. But as we go through those studies, I think one of the things that's interesting is even in the two studies where it was helpful, where it showed a benefit, and these are the two studies that they needed in order to get FDA approval. You need to do two different studies that show a benefit. So they got those. But they only showed a benefit for a very small number of people, and frankly, a relatively small benefit. So they defined a benefit as only a 25% improvement. That's relatively low, right? That's relatively low for a drug. And so a 25% improvement, it could happen anywhere from 6 to 12 months after you started taking the drug. This is one of the things that I've thought of as kind of BS about Elmoran. They basically just say, well, if you ever start feeling better after you've taken the drug, it's because of the Elmoran, right? But most drugs don't work that way. We know when they're going to have an effect. We know how long it takes them to build up in the system and have a benefit. It's not 6 to 12 months away. It's you should be feeling differently in a week or 6 weeks or 3 months even for some medications. But it's really precise. They were able to define this wide-ranging, you know, thing of any benefit you see within a year of taking this is going to be related to the drug, when in reality, there's a lot of stuff that goes on in your life during a year, different stresses, different physical activity, different changes in your body, and any of those can conflate and confound those studies. But of the two that showed a benefit, one of them helped 32% of patients, while 16% of those on the placebo were helped, and the other one helped 28% of patients, while 13% of those on the placebo were helped. So I know we're throwing a lot of numbers at you, but that basically means about 16% of people were helped by Elmoran, but not by the people who took the placebo. That was the benefit in these really small, about 100, 150 people studies that got FDA approval. Now, on the other side, they kept studying this, and three studies, most of which were larger than those, actually showed there was no effectiveness compared to the placebo. And there was no change in effectiveness depending on the dose that you had. So one of the things that we would always expect with medication is that as you take more of it, it works more effectively to a certain point, right? There should be a little bit of dose dependence and stuff. If you take one Tylenol, you get certain results. If you take two, you would expect to be getting more or different results. Now, eventually you take too much and it's not good for you. So there's a perfect balance there, but you should be seeing a difference there. They've never shown that in any of these studies. And in fact, one of these studies, the largest one of almost 400 patients, actually stopped the treatment early. They stopped the study. And most of the times when this happens, they don't even have to tell you or publish that, the negative information. But these authors did, which we all really appreciate. But they basically said that, quote, study continuation was futile because it wasn't working any better than a placebo. So we have really, really mixed efficacy data. And it either means that Omron is really not effective at all, or it's effective for this very small subset of 15 to 16% of people, but not for the wider population. And that kind of makes sense when we realize that the mechanism of action isn't really, it's going after the wrong thing.
Right. Well, and it actually makes perfect sense when you look at the amount of people that actually have bladder lining pathology is about 10%. And this works, you know, around in those teens. And so it's like, that makes sense from that perspective. But the
although it is interesting, though, because it doesn't show to be any more effective. It's actually a little bit less effective in people with Hunter's lesions. So even then, there's not really a huge correlation with any of that, which is really fascinating when you see it. So on the efficacy side, if we're really only at maybe 15% get a moderate, a 25% improvement, we're really thinking that this is like, ooh, this is doesn't have that much efficacy. So I think one of the questions, Nicole, and we all know people who have are swear by Omron and really feel like it's helped and benefited them. And I think there's really three reasons for that. And I don't want to ever dismiss anybody's individual thing. Everybody's different. So there's a couple reasons why that might happen. Omron really might have a small benefit for some people, that small subset of people. This might be just an example of the placebo effect, especially when it has 6 to 12 months to quote unquote work, right? You can start to, you know, any improvement is attributed to Omron, but it might just be something else going on in life. And the other one, which I really think is likely one of the main answers here, is what's called reversion to mean. And that's a statistical term, but basically what that means is that usually when you go in to get a medication, you're going in when your symptoms are the worst, right? You're going in your urologist because you're in the middle of a flare, you're in the middle of an issue, and they give you a medication. And then 3 to 6 months later, maybe your symptoms start to abate a little bit. But maybe it's not because of the medication, it's just part of the natural ebb and flow of your symptoms. So you went in and got, you know, let's say when you were at 8 out of 10 pain, you went in and got care, and then your pain dropped to 5 out of 10, you attribute that to Omron, but in reality, maybe your normal is 5 out of 10, whatever that means, and you were just in the midst of this flare, and then you reverted back to your mean, and now we're giving Omron the credit for that. So I think those are three different explanations, and it's probably some combination, Nicole, of all three when we think about the people who really swear by the efficacy of Omron and really believe that it's had a major benefit in their case.
Absolutely. And so one of the other things we wanted to point out with this podcast in particular is some of the negatives about it. Because if you look at a pro and con list, the pros are not as pro as we thought they were 10 years ago. And the cons are more conny than we thought 10 years ago. So let's go through some of those negatives now of the drug.
Well, the biggest one that's come out and has prompted a lawsuit against the company, has prompted the FDA warning label, has prompted the warnings in the AUA guidelines, is this threat of retinal damage. And that grows the longer that you take it and the more that you take. So if you're taking an extremely high dosage, there have been physicians out there who said, well, if Omron doesn't work for you, you're not taking enough. Here, take more. That's going to lead to, and not inevitably, right? So if you're taking this or you have taken Omron in the past, it doesn't mean that everybody who's taken Omron will have retinal damage, but that's a major potential and risky side effect for people who are starting the drug or if you're considering about whether or not to take it or to go on or off it.
And what it does mean is that if you have taken it, even if you've stopped the drug, you definitely need to go and make sure that you're seeing an eye specialist that also is a specialist in retinal conditions. So usually that's an ophthalmologist, an MD, that whose specialty is the retina.
Right. Not just your local lens crafter's person, right?
Yes.
The other thing is that I feel like for years, you've always thought, Nicole, that, man, they really downplay the side effects that your patients with Elmeron had seen.
Yes. I mean, this is one of the things that, I mean, I've treated hundreds, if not thousands of patients with interstitial cystitis, and this was always something so shocking. And there was a time when Elmeron was getting prescribed, like literally everybody that I was seeing was on Elmeron when it was in its heyday. And man, those side effects of people reporting hair falling out and skin conditions and gut issues and all kinds of things with it, severe hair loss, like coming out in clumps. And many of you folks listening to this might know, list every other negative side effect on it. But I always was like, holy crap, is this even worth it? Like, this is a lot. And is it really helping your symptoms? The people were still in my office with severe IC symptoms. And so those side effects, I think, are things that you don't want to scoff at. And especially now with this new information coming out about the potential of true and irreversible eye damage, like, we really need to think about those cons. And is the cost benefit analysis changing for you now that we have more opportunities for other things to do?
Yeah. And then the last thing I have on this negatives list, Nicole, and you've seen this a lot with your patients, is both the cost and the opportunity cost of taking Elmeron. So I think one of the big challenges is that a lot of folks were given Elmeron and basically told, hey, this may work for you sometime in the next 6 to 12 months, maybe give it a year and a half. And now all of a sudden, that's all that you're doing is you're sitting around waiting for Elmeron to work. The drug itself is often relatively expensive. There's not a generic on the market. It's taking away funds that could have been used for pelvic floor physical therapy, for example, something that's going to be far more effective and proven effective than what Elmeron is. And so even if, I think one of the big takeaways here is, even if you do decide to continue on Elmeron, man, don't let that be the only thing that you're doing, because even the people that it was helping, we're talking about a 25% improvement. We're not talking full on, no symptoms, you're feeling amazing. We're talking about a relatively moderate change for all of this. So don't let that be the only thing. It's very rare that Elmeron is going to be the end all be all for your case.
Absolutely. And then the other thing that I just want to point out in terms of somebody having been a lot of times like the second, third, seventh, 10th person that they've seen for interstitial cystitis is that opportunity cost there. I cannot tell you how many people ended up either getting crying in my office or angry at every other medical provider before then, saying, why didn't someone tell me about pelvic floor physical therapy, especially when, if we're talking about the AUA guidelines, it has much better efficacy. It's higher rated on efficacy on those same AUA guidelines that those urologists are looking at to determine whether or not to give somebody Elmeron. Like, every single person should be offered, and I think required, but offered to go to pelvic floor physical therapy, because that in and of itself can address so many other issues of IC. And that opportunity cost is huge, especially when it's presented to you as the patient in the way that Jesse described. Oh, take this thing and we'll see if it works. We'll see in 6 months to let you know. Or here, take this thing. This should at some point help your bladder symptoms, and we're not going to have you do any other things while we're having you wait to see that, because we don't want to conflate any data. A lot of times that's the mentality of a physician. And at the end of the day, this is your body and your symptoms that you're having to deal with every single day. And I really want you to take into consideration that this is a multifactorial syndrome. A bladder pain syndrome, interstitial cystitis, is a multifactorial problem, and therefore it's not going to be one magic bullet. It's not going to be one pill. It's not going to be one thing that fixes your symptoms. It has to be a multifactorial approach for a multifactorial and multifaceted problem.
And this would be probably the single biggest thing that we would disagree with, Nicole, the AUA in their most recent guidelines, is that they let Elmeron continue to be an evidence grade of B despite this poor efficacy data, despite the addition of this eye damage risk. That would be an area that we would have a little bit of a bone to pick. But, you know, it really makes me think, as a society, we're always looking for a kind of that, like, we've been trained by the medical system to look for this quick fix, this one pill. And man, if physical therapy for interstitial cystitis was a drug, it would literally blow everything out of the water. I mean, Elmoron, like we just talked about, maybe is mildly beneficial for 15% of people. Maybe. Pelvic floor physical therapy is massively beneficial for 90% of people.
Totally.
So if we even just compared these side by side and said, this is why the opportunity cost is so important, man, if we could just actually compare those things and say, hey, where should people be going? What should be the first thing that's offered? It is very clear from the AUA guidelines, from the efficacy studies, from the research, from individuals' stories that pelvic floor physical therapy is the gold standard. That is the first thing that should be done. It's what the AUA says, and then we need to have the information catch up. So, Nicole, I mean, just to put it really plainly, is there ever somebody that you would really advise, man, you need to be on Elmoron or you need to start Elmoron now?
Well, gosh, you know, this is something that always needs to be talked about with your whole medical team. And I've counseled many patients on how to have effective conversations with their physicians on this. But especially with this new information on the eye damage, that it's sometimes irreversible, that it persists even after stopping the drug, that it's dose dependent, all of those things really makes me hesitant to say that I would ever, if someone's not on it, to be like, oh, you need to go talk to your doctor about starting it now. I feel like it's a slightly different conversation if someone is already on it and they really feel like they're seeing the benefit. I still am having them have a great conversation with their doctor and really talking about this cost benefit and the opportunity cost, especially if it's a financial strain to stay on it that can be taking resources away from other things that we know to be more effective in the long run. So yeah, that's the long answer to that question.
That's the long and short of it there. So I hope this has been helpful for those of you guys who have been thinking about Elmoron, who have been prescribed it, who may be on it or have been on it in the past. We wanted to give you guys the most recent research, all of the efficacy, and let you guys make an informed decision about your own care. So hope this has been helpful. There's a lot more information in Nicole's IC course, also in the IC solution. Both of those, we'll put links for those in the show notes, but we hope that you're able to get the kind of help that you need and be able to do that in a way that really makes sense for you and for your life and for your goals in what you're doing with your health. So as always, we appreciate every single one of you listening. Thank you so much for those who have taken the time to do a review or a rating. It really does help others find us. Make sure you have subscribed so you get to hear all of the most recent episodes as they come out. We will see you all on the next episode.
And we hope this has helped you to find just a little bit of pelvic sanity.